And, of course, there is Thursday night footy tonight to kick off the last home and away round of the season. The Kangaroos take on the Eagles at Metricon Stadium. 7:10, check your local guides. Brad Johnson is a champ from the Bulldogs. In fact, he's just a champ full stop, and he joins us. Good morning, Jono.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. Good morning, everyone. Half, it's always a big time of year, isn't it, mate, when you look at players that are retiring, players that are getting told that you're probably not going to be required next year as well. So the changes that happen within a footy club this time of year can be quite emotional. And you ride that emotion with the players that have retired that you've played a lot of footy with, but also you feel for the guys that are being told that their AFL careers are coming to an end. So as much as we lead into finals, it can be a tough time of year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right. And particularly this year, John, I reckon that because there's going to be cuts to the list, it's probably even more brutal a time than perhaps previous years or normal years in the world of footy, because right, there's always players who are told that their dream is over and others that the dream has ended on their terms more often than not. But this year, with the number of spots on the list being reduced, it's going to make that even more challenging.
Yeah, the other thing too, Harp, I think, is that we've had a few players that have actually told their clubs that they're going to look for a trade and have moved on and stepped away from the environment, that we haven't really seen in the past as well. So I think that's a little bit of a changing dynamic that we haven't spoken too much about in terms of how you deal with that sort of situation within a playing group environment, and how, players now through their management, of course, are making decisions to say, hey, you know, we're not playing finals. I'm looking for a trade and I'm going to step away now, which has been interesting as well.
So we've got Sean Burgon coming on a little bit later on, as you would have heard, Jono, goes around for season number 20 or 21, whatever it is, next season. Now, you played a hell of a lot of games. You played an enormous amount of football, but could you have seen another 4 or 5 years out of you?
Oh, if I didn't get hit by a golf cart, then possibly that might have got a few more years. No doubt. It's always, I was well and truly done and dusted. Look, mentally, I would have loved to have gone around and kept going, but physically, I just couldn't handle the loads of training anymore. So that's the way that it panned out for myself, the day in, day out, and the battles that you go through. Sean Burgoyne, this is absolutely amazing. You know, Brent Harvey a few years ago, Boomer Harvey could have kept going. As well, he'd probably still be playing today and be the best inside 50 kick in the competition still. So that's how good Boomer was going when he actually did finish up. It's going to be great to have another player, hopefully stay injury free, Sean, and get to 400 games. It's just been huge to have two players achieve that in the modern time, and to be able to see that has been enormous. And what he's done to achieve so much at Hawthorn, he came over from Port Adelaide and, you know, everyone was saying that his knees were gone, he was spent, you know, he wouldn't have much footy left in him. So it's a credit to himself and everyone at Hawthorn that have been able to get the real best out of Sean Burgoyne, and we've witnessed it. So it's been great to see.
Now, Scott Pendlebury's not retiring, but I saw a stat yesterday that last 13 years, Jono, 11 of those he's been top three in the BNF. Now, he equaled the record with Tony Shaw the other week of 313 games. He's going to break that this week, which is fantastic. He's been a remarkable player, hasn't he, consistently, at like excellence for a prolonged period of time, which is the essence of greatness and legends of the sport. But 11 top threes out of the last 13 years is quite a remarkable thing in a game where there's so many players involved in any one team.
Yeah, that's right. And that's enormous, that stat, isn't it, really, when you have a think about it? If he's had the BNF bonus for the last 11 years, he'd be going really well. But outside of that, look, that's why you have those comparisons with what Nathan Buckley achieved at Collingwood and who's the better player and all those sort of things. And look, they've both played through the midfield in different eras, and you can't compare. You just got to admire what both have achieved when you're looking at both and what they've done through the game and for the Pies. Pendlebury, unbelievably smoothness. He hasn't lost that. He hasn't lost that agility and that smoothness through the contest. I think he'll have that forever. And he's the type of player that just plays pretty much every single week and plays at a top level. And he's been just so good for the Pies for a long time. His composure is the most important thing, I think, in the contest. You just see how composed he is when he gets the ball and he steps through traffic and brings his teammates into the game.
He'll be top three again this year, you would imagine, in their best and fairest. And there's not too many players that reach the amount of games he has, and you still think of him being at the absolute peak of his powers. I don't think he's any different now than he was, say, 5 or 6 years ago with his output and his ability to impact games. And Now, I've said this before, Jono, he's kind of a victim of his own success because he's so consistently good. He kind of goes under the radar because he just churns out a high import every single week. And I'm not sure he gets the accolades or the recognition, I guess, he deserves because he is just so consistent.
Yeah, look, and that's the way that it can be, I suppose, perceived, because you just expect it every single week from a Scott Pendlebury. Yeah, and he just goes out and you know what you're going to get from him, where some other players might be up and down a little bit. And when they play amazing, you sort of go, well, how good's that? Where Pendles is just consistently good the whole time. Mm. I think over the last few years, though, they have created a really strong midfield around Pendlebury as well to really help him. And I think that will help him stay in the game a little bit longer as well, because you look at the likes of Adams and where he's at, and Treloar when he's out there, how good he is, and side bottom, of course. You've got Phillips on the wing. So Pendlebury can sort of float around a little bit more. He doesn't draw the fact that there's no sort of serious taggers these days that are just locking onto him, trying to restrict him as much in the game these days. He gets to sort of move the way that Scott Pendlebury wants to move. And I think that's allowed him to sort of position himself really well, be smart. We know how smart he is. So he could keep doing this for years to come because of the way the game is played these days.
One thing I don't think he gets a lot of credit for, you talk about his ability to get through traffic and being so smooth. He's a powerful beast. Like, he's, you can't do that just by dancing. You've got to have real power. And now, you wouldn't look at him and say that he's going to run the world's fastest 100 metres, but by God, he can just power out of situations and make it look effortless. But it's real physical power, Jono. It's not just a guy who's not sitting in the weight room and staying away from the squat rack. I reckon he'd be going absolutely hardcore in the squat rack to get that power through his legs.
Yeah, 100% up. Look, the way that you can see that in his ability, and the what I really loved about Scott this year is that there's been a couple of games where he's actually taken it upon himself to change the nature of the way the game has been played for the Pies. They've been down a little bit and they've been struggling against some of the teams, and then all of a sudden Pendlebury has a 10 to 15 minute period where you just go, whoa, hang on a second, and he's been able to draw Collingwood back level and get their momentum going back in their favour. And that's probably been the pleasing thing with how, you know, long he's been in the game and what he's achieved. He's still grabbing the side when needed and putting them on his shoulders and getting them back either into the contest or allowing them to start to control the contest in front. And I think that's been the most pleasing thing this year.
So what about the Magpies then, Jono? While we're there, they locked in their final spot last weekend with their victory over the Gold Coast Suns. It was Monday night, wasn't it? Monday night. Are they just making up the numbers, or can they bring it together with a guy like Jordan Ngoi back in the team and clearly playing very, very well on that debut performance or their resumption performance? Are they a contender, or are they just making up the numbers?
No, they're definitely seriously got to... You've got to look at... they can contend this year. I think with the nature of the way that they will get their side back together now over the next couple of weeks, and they'll have the break. A lot of those guys will be much needed for them as well. Look, the Port Adelaide game coming up will be a big test, obviously, for them, and we'll be able to judge a lot more on the back of that when they do play them. So they're on 38. They can go to 42. So they can't... But 60 is where they will finish regardless, even if they get over Port Adelaide. If they lose to Port Adelaide and St Kilda and the Bulldogs win, they can drop to 8th. But they know they're... And if West Coast finish 5th, that becomes probably more of the battle than anything, just their positioning and where their first final could possibly be played. Whether they probably want it in Queensland if they can manage that. So I think there's going to need to be a little bit of luck go their way with the results if they don't win. But they'll know by Monday where they sit because everyone else has played. And they'll know if we win, we finish 5th or 6th. If we lose, then we could finish 8th, and we know who we're going to play in the finals. But outside of that, I think their playing group will be really healthy and really ready to go. And the intriguing thing now is how to get Steele back. That's the thing. And a big congratulations go to him with the birth of his child. But now all the discussion from the AFL world goes, okay, well, is he going to make the decision, one, to step back into the hub and try and play some finals footy? I think we'll wait to hear from Steele in the short term with that, and then how they can make that happen.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting, very interesting. Because, you can just tell the difference when a Ngoi comes back into the team, just how it changes the whole complexion of things. And Ngoi and Treloar obviously make Collingwood a lot better. We were talking about the Giants earlier, Jono, and you know, the Jeremy Cameron situation and what he'll do. And obviously this is going to be speculation that plays out all the way through until he decides one way or the other. But it kind of with Finlayson recommitting to the club and Canelio being left out last week, I think the feeling is he'll come back into the team for this week. And just the Giants potentially missing the finals. What's your view on what they should do, you know, from a list management perspective and also just a leadership perspective through Leon Cameron as to... Because it seems like he's getting a bit harder on them internally about, you know, the demands of you're in or you're out. And also with, you know, the statement they made with dropping Canelio last week.
Yeah, I think they need to do absolutely everything to keep Jeremy Cameron on the list. I look at GWS and every year they lose, and I know the type of list that they've got, and it's generally been through the midfield, but every year they lose an out-and-out star in the game from their club. And I think that's starting to have more of an effect on the club as a whole than anything else. The fact that they've got these players that are, you know, guns that set a high standard, yet every year one of them's dropping out. Now, I know they do have the salary cap pressure with that because of the standard that these guys are setting. But for me, look, with Jeremy Cameron and his contract, I think it's Finlayson signing, but I think the complexities around the two deals are poles apart in terms of the way that it looks and the negotiations that would come with those deals. I think Finlayson's would be a lot easier to lock away than what a Jeremy Cameron would, just because of possibly the size difference in contract. So I think, I think Jeremy, well, I'd like Jeremy to sort of stay if GWS can work that out. They should be doing absolutely everything they possibly can to make that happen, because they just can't afford to year in, year out now as a side that's been in the competition for some time to keep losing one of their best players every single year. I think that's starting to eat away sort of underneath in terms of where the club needs to go in the future.
Mm.
Well, yeah. So would you trade... We're just going to play games here for a second, John. Would you trade Joe Danaher for Jeremy Cameron?
Well, that's, probably not. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do a direct trade for that. No, I'd be keeping Jeremy Cameron if I possibly could, because you know it's still the unknown with Joe. But maybe, you know, I know GWS didn't get Buddy a couple of years ago. Maybe they try and pull one over Sydney this time and get Joe Danaher underneath. But no, I'd be doing everything I possibly can to keep Jeremy Cameron at that football club if I was GWS. And they probably are, but clubs are going to throw some big dollars at him, some big deals, because they know that the big power forward is starting to come back into the game and having a huge say again. So a Jeremy Cameron is going to be quite important for a side structure, as we realise now in the near future.
So why wouldn't he have signed then, Jono? Why wouldn't he have agreed? He's the highest paid player at the Giants. It's not as if he's missed out through the journey, you would think. Why wouldn't he have signed as a commitment to the club and to be able to just focus on what he needs to do going forward?
Yeah, look, I understand that. And that's that raises the questions, and it always has.
That's right.
We know that. A player that doesn't sign by this time of year, there usually are some questions that are raised around that. But we've also had players that have holed out and then stay at their footy clubs in the end anyway. And then they come out and go, I wasn't going anywhere anyway. But we had a look at the market. So, but that's okay. Players are able to do that this year. And I think it's really more around the complexities of it. His type of deal, you know, the length, the type of money we could be talking about and the complexities that come with that from a whole list point of view would take some sort of time to put together. But yeah, you're right. We haven't actually even really heard that, you know, we're in negotiations where, you know, we're trying to work through a few things. This is where I want to play my football. They're all the little triggers that you sort of, you know, start to try and listen to around this time of year. So yeah, it's an intriguing one. But like I said, my personal view is I'd love him and the Giants to come to a deal for the reasons I mentioned before.
Yep.
But totally understand that, you know, there's every likelihood as well that he steps away.
I think there's two complexities to it, Half. One is that until they know what the cap is going to be and list sizes are going to be, I think it's probably responsible almost to wait just to see what the landscape looks like, so he can get the best possible deal he can get. But the other complication around it is that because Ben Brown is I would say he's likely to move, that's another key forward. So you know, it's very rare that a key forward is available. There could be a situation where there are two. So there are going to be other clubs that are just going to need to know what Jeremy is going to do, because they'll go, well, if I can't get Jeremy, well, let's go for Ben Brown. You know what I mean? So I think he's got to play his cards soon. Otherwise, the club that he might want to go to, they might have then committed to Ben Brown and he can't get there.
Yeah, or Joe. Or Joe,
yeah.
So there's a couple maybe in the market. We don't know the extent of it,
That could force his hand earlier as a result.
It'd be enormous. If you can secure Jeremy Cameron to your football club, that is massive. Like that is a bigger trade as what we've seen throughout this competition throughout time. I know Gaz was probably the biggest one when he went to the Gold Coast Suns. But outside of that, this is huge. This guy is a serious player in our game. He hasn't had a great year, but outside of that, he is probably one of the best power forwards in the competition, with his way that he moves consistently, can get up, get back. He'll be enormous for any team. It'll be a huge coup to get him into your club.
So, Jono, do you think he is a better or more important player than, say, Tom Lynch? So Tom obviously moved to Richmond when he was the co-captain of the Suns. Is Jeremy Cameron, do you think, another level up?
Probably on par with the Tom Lynch in terms of that sort of thing. The impact he will have in game, I think, is quite similar to what Tom would do or does do on a regular basis for Richmond. So yeah, you're probably looking at a similarity there, Whitey, to be frank with that. But that's where GWS's style, I think, and that's why everyone's going, oh, why is he on the wing? What's going on here? And I think that's what needs to play out more than anything, maybe in Jeremy's mind, around the way he's being played at the Giants, and if they can adjust that to get the very best from him with the other two tools that they've got. And that's probably the thing that's maybe playing on his mind a little bit, in terms of, is there an opportunity out there where I can get the best out of and play in the best position that I know I can perform the best in this competition? At the moment, we're not seeing it. He's up the ground higher. He's not getting the type of ball that he did over the last couple of years from the structure that they've got the Giants. So, you know, that's probably coming into his thought process as well.
Are they the most disappointing team in the season, Jono, the Giants?
Oh, look, yeah, I thought they would have responded a lot harder off what happened at the end of last year with the way they bowed out of that grand final. And I think we chatted about that in the past. I think the way that they've come off that hasn't been great, although physically they've been in a pretty good spot. But they've just had players that have just had, you know, down years. And, you know, everyone, the whole talk around dropping Stephen Cornelio and all that sort of stuff. If you get to that point in the year, it's really difficult for you to have some sort of impact. You would have thought everything's got to be running smoothly. Your best players have got to be at their very best. So, yeah, they've been really disappointing throughout the year. They just haven't had the collective play well together half. They've had individuals that have had good games, but as a collective, you can't sit there and sort of say too many times that GWS as a whole 22 that ran out have all played well on a day and really driven them over the line, and you go, well, here we go. It's really been individual-based performances this year that have been the standout, not the collective.
So let's focus on Cornelio for a second on that decision. Do they have to bring him back in this week? And if they don't, why did they drop him in the first place? So if they do, why did they drop him in the first place?
That's a really good point, Harper. You know, you normally you drop, you've got to go and find some form. But look, they've made a big statement with that. And I go back to the way that it's been handled. And as you know, Harper, when you see a senior player and I know the captain is a totally another level, so bear with me here. But we know when we've seen a key senior player within your football club get told they're not playing that week, it comes down to how they respond to that. If they crack the sads and, you know, go and chirp in the change rooms and mope around and all that sort of stuff, it will probably keep them out of the side for a good couple of weeks. But if they respond in the right way and they understand the decision that's been made and they're realistic within themselves, they generally can get in the following week, because it's usually seen as a bit of a statement. It resets them. They come back with some sort of motivation that can actually drive their performance back to the level that is required. And that's part of the reason why they do get dropped in the first place, is maybe a bit of a reset to them, give them a chance to breathe a bit, and then they go. And I think Cornelio's in the same boat. I would be bringing him straight back in to the lineup. I think you'll get a different motivation. He's had a chance to reset, sit upstairs in the coach's box, have a good think about the way that he's playing, the way the team's playing, And I think it'll only be a bonus for him to come straight back into the lineup this week.
We'll see what they do there at the Giants for their last game, probably, of the home and away season. At 7:30 Thursday morning, we'll get to a break. Brad Johnson with us. He's our Thursday night specialist. There's a game tonight to discuss as well, North Melbourne and West Coast, but there's a few other topics we want to throw past the Bulldogs champion. So stick around and get yourself involved on The Breakfast Club. Nobody wants to be left outside alone, Anastasia. Nobody. 26-8 on Thursday morning. Brad Johnson, a part of the team on The Breakfast Club. I'm going to chat about the Kangas and the West Coast Eagles very shortly. It's a game tonight to kick off round 18, the last home and away round for 2020. But Anastasia's playing in the background, John. I know you love your music. Your daughter Ella J doing great things on Spotify. Check her out. But Anastasia had a hit with that song, Left Outside Alone. Number one it was in Australia in 2004. How old? We play this game every day, John. How old is Anastasia, please?
Anastasia would be... She would be 41.
41 for Anastasia. Whitey, how old is Anastasia, please?
She's got a very old-sounding voice, very gravelly sort of smoker's type of voice.
When she came on the scene, I thought she was Taylor Dayne. Taylor Dayne had a very similar voice.
Yes. I'm gonna say she's 49.
Well, that's the three-year window. You've done it again. She's 52 today, Anastasia. Ah. But she loves Brad Johnson. She loves him. 41. She needs more Brad Johnson in her life. Don't worry about that.
She must have been a bit older when that single came out.
Well, that was 2004.
I was thinking about how old I was in 2004, and then she looked a lot younger than I did.
It's the makeup, Jono. It's the makeup.
It is.
They get you with the makeup every time. Happy birthday, Anastasia. 52 today. Jono, who's going to make the finals? How's it going to play out this last round? What have you got happening for the last couple of spots in the eight?
Yeah, it's going to be tough and tight, isn't it, guys? It's been exciting the whole way through. It's been exciting in terms of, you know, the top four and who's going to finish in the top four. And West Coast tonight just absolutely have to destroy North Melbourne, win by a big way. Look, it's going to be tough for them to, you know, with Geelong and Richmond and Geelong playing the Sydney Swans and Richmond playing Adelaide. So West Coast, even if they win, probably still finish fifth on the ladder. And then, you know, we go to the position 6, 7 and 8. You know, the Pies versus Port, the Saints and GWS is absolutely enormous tomorrow night. That sets up the weekend because we'll know after that result what will happen if GWS... get up. It puts just pressure, of course, on St Kilda for other results to go their way to hold their spot in the eight. Giants can't beat them by a big enough margin to make up the percentage. So it probably keeps St Kilda in those realms. And Melbourne play Essendon, so they will know that if St Kilda do lose, they'll know exactly what percentage they need to make up against Essendon in that game to make it. So it's intriguing all the way through to the final game on Monday, which is Collingwood and Port Adelaide.
It's going to be an interesting way to finish the season. And just overall, just as an aside for a second, do you like the 17-round concept, Jono? Everyone plays each other once. There's no weighted draws. There's no rivalry round. It's just everyone plays each other once. It's almost a pure form of the competition. What do you think about it?
Yep, I think it's been great. I've been sort of saying for years that this is what we need to get to in the future. I understand with, you know, the rights and all those sort of things that won't change for a period of time. But I think it needs to be part of the discussions into the next aspects of where it all sits, because I think the AFL will be reasonably happy with the way that it all has sort of panned out. You can still have your matches at the important times of the year, and we understand that around, you know, some of the big blockbuster games that we see throughout the year and the important dates that go with that, in particular around Anzac Day and those things in particular. I think that all can still be sorted out within the realms of a 17-week season, or you play everyone once. You still go out to probably 19 or 20 weeks anyway with a couple of buys in there potentially. Yeah. So... I still think it's great that we play everyone once. It's fair, it's equal, you know, where everyone sits in the competition, and you're not getting that weight of draw of playing, you know, a bottom side, you know, twice to give yourself that maybe that little bit of an extra boost.
All right, I've got a question for you, Jono. It's you've got one of three answers. Next year, round one, the first quarter, will be a 16-minute quarter, an 18-minute quarter, or a 20-minute quarter?
It plus should be plus time on. I think it should be a 18-minute quarter plus time on. Plus time
half?
On. Sit in the middle for me.
Yeah.
I want survival of the fittest. I want 20 minutes plus.
Yeah, I think it might be this week or early next week that the competition committee will meet and they'll start talking about what it might look like for next year. I mean, I don't think they'll make a decision yet, but I think it will be on the agenda as to what it looks like. I truly hope it goes back to 20, but I think it might end up being in the middle. I think it might end up being 18 minutes.
Why would that happen?
We lose too much time in the game anyway.
If you're not going to play more games, John, sorry, mate. If you're not going to play more games, why would you shorten the games?
Because I think that there was a feeling amongst some that even last year, before coronavirus, that the worry was that the games were going too long for television and that people were switching off in the second half and they were blaming the length of the game as opposed to the quality or lack of quality of the game. And I think that the 18 minutes is a bit in the middle. It's shortening the game by probably 15 minutes, but it's also still giving the chance for the game to go a little bit longer and maybe for quarters to open up a little bit, you know, late in those quarters.
I think we lose too much time in the game anyway, and I think that, you know, if we have a missed bounce, 2 seconds are gone on the clock, but I think it's more around that set shot type of thing because a player that takes his 30, the clock still runs there. I think that's a time where we can sort of call time on the game. The player still gets his 30 seconds for his shot, but we're not losing 30 seconds for him just taking, you know, 30 seconds to go in the game and he takes that 30 off the clock, siren goes, has the shot. I think that's an opportunity to maybe call time there and that 30 seconds still runs. And then if he does play on in that period, the clock just starts automatically. But if he takes his full 30 in the run-up, once he's kicked the ball, we start the clock again from that point. That's a way of maybe keeping the game, you know, 18-minute quarters, but all those other little things will still drum out to be mid-20s, I think, by the time we finish the quarter.
We'll see. All right. When's that competition committee meeting? Whitey, next week?
I think it's either later this week or early next week. And again, a decision wouldn't be made yet, but I think they're going to start to look at those sorts of things. Because there was a push from some that it should go back to 20-minute quarters for the final series. Now, they weren't going to change what they've done through the home and away series, the qualifying series for the finals.
No, that's a silly thing to say.
But too many coaches, Jono, have said to us just this year, when it's 16-minute quarters, it's so much easier to coach defence and so much easier to keep the players concentrating and fit enough or strong enough, you know, physically to be able to stay in formation for longer defensively, which means low scores.
So if they keep the quarters low, does that mean they've changed rotations again and make it more difficult for the players so they stay on the ground longer?
Well, that has to become a talking point, doesn't it?
Mm.
The concept of making the game easier, I don't like. Philosophically, it's alien to me that you're trying to make the game easier. It's not what the game's about. It's not supposed to be easy, John. And you know better than anyone after your outstanding career. It's not supposed to be easy, and that's why the greats are celebrated and players who survive and are amazing players get the plaudits because it's not easy. It's a long way from being easy, and it shouldn't be easy. It's not what the sport's about.
Well, I do agree with that half, and that's where the survival of the fittest aspect of things comes into it, over a game and over a season as well, because you're backing up week in, week out to, you know, run the 15 to 20 Ks that you do per game and getting up to go again. And I think that, you know, from that side of things, that's really important. That's an important part of the game, but it's just trying to open up the scoring a little bit, trying to lengthen the ground at times. Yeah. There's even some discussion in the background around kickouts and, are they going to adjust a kick-out where they're going to make players reset potentially on a kick-out? And all these discussions will probably happen in that committee meeting, as you mentioned, Whitey. But that's the important thing for me is how we lengthen and how we actually create a bit more free-flowing scoring in our game. It has gone really defensive. And maybe we just have to get our head around that. And maybe that's something I need to change in my own mind around I've got to park the scoring side of things because it is a defensive game now. And maybe I've just got to grow to love the defensive game, which I struggle really struggled to do just because of the type of player that I was and the type of game I love to watch and have known to watch for a very, very long time. So hopefully they can work on ways and coaches start to adjust that the scoring in our game is critical to the entertainment factor.
My word of this, and don't you ever cave on that, Jono. Don't start to love this defensive crap
you're putting out there at the moment.
Don't fall for it, mate. Don't fall for that rubbish. Now, before we let you go, North Melbourne, West Coast tonight, what do the Kangaroos get out of this? What are they playing at tonight, the Kangaroos? It's been a horrible year for them in many respects. What are they trying to achieve out of this?
Oh, look, they've just got to try and find a way to compete half, to be honest. They're not putting any tackle pressure on the opposition. They've really dropped away in all facets of competing around the ball. It's been a walk in the park for the opposition, and so it just comes down to that to finish off. They're going to try and put one last effort in that allows them to at least compete and fight a little bit and that around the footy and see if they can put some physical pressure on the West Coast Eagles. And look, West Coast will win this game. We all understand that. But look, ultimately for North Melbourne, you know, their last month of, you know, I don't think they walk away achieving too much at all. And it's a shame. So they've got a lot to do. They've got to give themselves a bit of a spark leading into the summer. And at the moment, they haven't provided that for themselves, you know, over this further holiday period, giving them something positive to think about leading into a big preseason. And that's what it will be. But ultimately, you know, they've just got to try and compete as much as they can. Just fight tonight. Fight and scrap and see what they can get out of it from that end.
Is there a danger, and again, you would know this better than anyone, a danger that in the last round, because I think the last round and the first round of the season are always the hardest games to win because you just don't know what's happening. You don't know who's out there trying to spoil the party. You don't know who's protecting themselves for finals campaign and how that affects teams' performance. Is there a danger the Eagles just sort of back it off tonight and try and protect themselves for a finals campaign, or players individually just maybe just going a little bit, taking a little bit of foot off the gas, Jono?
Nah, maybe when they're 35 points up in the last quarter, they might be able to do that. But nah, they won't. Not from the outset. You know, a lot of the players within the West Coast lineup are still fighting for a spot in that finals team. They've got some players coming back from injury. They've got some players that are out injured still. So there's opportunity there. And I think that's the mindset that they'll certainly be going in with, especially the majority of that group. You know, they might have their spot secured for a final, but there's a few there too that are really, you know, putting themselves up in Adam Simpson's mind consistently to say, hey, I want to be a part of this final series. So I think you'll see that from the West Coast Eagles. Although, you know, McGovern's out and those things, I don't think it'll affect them too much tonight. And they'll try and get those guys right for the finals.
Good SMS just come through. Mason Woodrop spells the end. It'd be very interesting what they do with Mason Wood, who I still think, and he's never put it out there consistently, I still think he's a terrific talent, but we're just not going to see, he seemingly is incapable of putting it out there consistently, Jono, and impacting games.
I'm thinking of Mason Cox, sorry there for a second.
Yeah, he's a big tall man for Collingwood. Yep.
No, you're right. Yeah, you're right, Mason Wood. Yeah, that's up to Mason now. It completely is in terms of, you know, where he goes with his football. And, you know, that he's had an opportunity the last probably 3 or 4 weeks to show North Melbourne, show the footy world that he is capable. And he just hasn't been able to produce, unfortunately.
Jono, you're our player of Thursday. You've been awarded that title today. Congratulations for your performance. We love you being a part of our team on a Thursday. We look forward to doing it all again next week.
Thank you, Harf. And don't forget the King of Swing is in again tonight. Oh, we can't
forget
to mention the King. Yeah, the King is in, which is great. He's placed his last few starts, $467.50. He's paid $2 something tonight. He's about $3.30. Get on the King.
Come on, the King of Swing. Good luck, mate. Go get him.
Thanks, mate.
Brad Johnson with us on a Thursday morning. We'll get to a break. Talk to Melbourne Storm after this. Assistant coach Jason Riles is around the corner.